Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to our FA Cup giant killing run of podcasts. We've reached the quarterfinals, and Bill has been our suggestion box for this series and for the quarterfinals. Welcome, Bill Hearn.
Hi, Steve. Good to be back.
Looking forward to this one. Looking forward to all of them. But yeah, this is going to be an interesting one because we've got a slightly different angle for this one as well from anything that we've done so far in this series. And welcome, Dave Bowler, back again.
Back again, and still in the 21st century. Again, a bit off-brand, but that's two in a row now that we've done.
Absolutely. An era of squad numbers and names on the back of shirts. It's just not right.
Never catch on.
And welcome our very special guest tonight, Gary Silk, co-author of the extensive range of Got Not Got books, and one of the men behind the fantastic Conquer editions. Welcome, Gary, and thank you so much for joining us tonight, along with your Leicester City hat as well tonight, to give us the painful side of this.
Yeah, not particularly looking forward to it, but I'm here to tell you all about it.
You are brilliant stuff. Thank you so much for joining us, though, Gary. Leicester City in 2000-2001. They've just beaten Liverpool in the league. They're shaking off a bit of a rough span in the opening few weeks of the year, but they're sat fourth in the Premier League. They've had a fantastic run all the way up to Christmas. You know, they've won the League Cup the previous season, the second time in 3 years. Three calendar years, four seasons. A club of substance all of a sudden. Peter Taylor has taken over in the wake of Martin O'Neill's departure for Celtic. Everything's ticking along quite nicely at Filbert Street. And, you know, here is an FA Cup quarterfinal at home to third tier Wycombe Wanderers. A place in the semi final awaits. And it doesn't quite work out that way. I'll come to you first, Dave. Give us some of the background on this one, and where Wickham were at this point in time, and personally, the man in charge.
I mean, Wickham are still at this point a comparatively recent addition to the Football League, aren't they? Probably what 12, 13 years into their stay in the Football League, and they've had a good run in the Cup. They've beaten the Wolves on the way, which is always a good thing. But, you know, I mean, very much as we talked about in the last one, Burnley-Lincoln, I mean, from a Leicester point of view, you've got a home draw. It's against a lower league team. You're now within sight of the Cup final. I mean, you know, it's one of those ones where, as a Leicester fan, you go into the game full of expectation. There's always that dread, of course, because it's the Cup and you never know what's going to happen. But, the anticipation building that it's going to be the year, obviously, League Cup holders as well, and Wickham with nothing really to suggest that they're going to come through, other than the fact that Laurie Sanchez has won the Cup obviously before with Wimbledon. Sorry to mention that, Steve, and that they've managed to find a centre forward off the internet before eBay, really. So it's a real mishmash of a cup tie, but obviously as naturally, this being in the giant killer series, it's obviously who's going to win. Leicester are going to romp it, aren't they?
Indeed. I mean, Bill, we've reached the 2000s now. This isn't meant to happen.
No, I mean, you know, super rich clubs in the Premier, they should be beating teams like Wickham. But I mean, this is just so illogical that Leicester were top of the league earlier in the season. They're fourth when they go into the game against Wickham. And yet they're going to this run, and I'm sure Gary will cover it later. It isn't just the remainder of this season, it's the beginning of the following season as well. And suddenly I think they win 2 out of 21 games. And this is a team that was top of the Premier League not that long before they played Wickham. So, you know, try and make sense out of football. It really is just bizarre.
And Gary, I'll bring you into this bit. The Leicester City, you know, prior to this game, They were sat in a fantastic position. Like I say, I already mentioned those two League Cup successes. There was a third final, of course, that was, lost towards the very end. I think it was against Tottenham in 1999. The perspective of Leicester City going into this game.
It was a very peculiar season. Obviously, Martin O'Neill had come along, and he created a golden age, truly, for probably joint best team we'd ever had. Got promoted, four top half finishes in the Premier League, which was, for Leicester had always sort of bumped along bottom half of the old First Division. Or do well in the same division, but he took us on to a whole new level. And his departure in summer 2000 obviously led to Peter Taylor coming in. Now, you can look at the league table in March, and we'd just been Liverpool, just gone, we'd been top of the league earlier on in the season after about eight games. We were top for a couple of weeks, and you'd think, oh, well, Peter Taylor's doing a good job, but as ever, the fans of the club themselves would have told you that they were a little bit dubious about him. It was the O'Neill team that kept things going along. He brought such good players in on no budget that they almost sort of took care of themselves. And Peter Taylor was trying to make changes, but the players he was bringing in were nothing like the ones O'Neill had brought in, nothing like that standard. So we were sort of heading for a fall, but this game proved to be a huge watershed in our history. We were, as you can see from the league table, sailing. We were full of confidence, which isn't a Leicester City fan thing normally, but O'Neill had made this. So didn't really think we had any chance of losing this game. And we thought, well, we'll get Liverpool in the semis, and we've just beaten them. And we'd not been to a semi-final since for 19 years, since 82. So this was a really big deal for us, and it just fell apart. Fell apart. From that, I don't know, Izzet and Savage were injured in the Wickham game, and we went on to lose nine games on the trot. It just collapsed. That led to relegation season, and then a gradual decline into the third division. I'm not blaming that all on Wickham, but if you want a starting point for the decline, that's as good a place as any.
Dave, it's fascinating how a cup upset like that, can knock a club massively. I mean, it's not always an upset. It's that, I don't know, that loss of that big chance to go forward and do something. I see certain similarities in Bolton Wanderers losing an FA Cup semi-final to Stoke City 2011, and just what happened to them within the immediacy of that and where they went very, very swiftly. A much more extreme version, I think. But this fork in the road for Leicester City, it's quite, eye-opening.
Yeah, I mean the FA Cup. I mean again, that's the significance of the competition. It can just completely derail you. I mean, West Brom had the same thing with a Woking defeat 10 years before that. I mean, after that, they just. I mean, not that things were going great before, but they just collapsed and ended up in the third division as was at the end of that season. For all that they want to knock the FA Cup, it is still such a central part of every season because I mean, it does give you an opportunity to win something. It does give you the opportunity to dream where the league, although obviously Leicester went and disproved that 14 years later, but I mean, the league doesn't really give you that opportunity to dream very much by and large if you're the fan of a normal football club, where the FA Cup, there's always that way through. You can always pick your way through the minefield and get to Wembley and win a cup. And when you are presented with something like this, a third division team, you're at home, you're going to be in the semi-final of the cup and you blow it. Everything suddenly feels wrong about the whole. It affects the players. It affects the way the supporters, in particular, look at the club. The way the supporters feel about it. All the optimism drains away from you by the Saturday night, and then all of a sudden, everything's on a downer. And the popular phrase now is it becomes toxic. I mean, I don't know whether we were talking in those terms 20 years ago, but I mean, it does have that sort of that knock-on effect to it. Everybody just knocks the wind out of everybody. You know, there it was. It was there for the taking. It was going to be a, you know, a big moment in the club's history. And all of a sudden, some fellow that you've never heard of has knocked the living daylights out of you. And that does take some coming back from. And a lot of clubs, you know, you have that kind of a day, and the rest of the season is just a spiral.
9 games on the trot, lost was just shocking. It's a record of some kind. I'm not sure.
I think the falling off of performance is unique. Sunderland once lost 18 games in a row, and that was basically because we're in the wrong division, and as the Wears supporters constantly reminded us. Darwin once lost 19 in a row, but Leicester are unique because for 6 months they'd held their own in the Premier Division, and then suddenly it plummeted for 21 games. I mean, it's inexplicable, isn't it, Gary? I just don't know how that could happen.
The first game of the following season, we lost 5-0 to Bolton at home, newly promoted Bolton. And people say now it's the first time a team was ever relegated on the first day of the season because it was just gone. It was shot. Yeah, and it led to a serious decline after that. But the FA Cup meant a hell of a lot to Leicester City. I mean, you'll know we were in 4 finals, lost them all. 49, 61, 63, 69, lost them all. But we loved it at the time. Most of our most memorable games were FA Cup games, you say, because we're always bumping along in Division 1 or Division 2. Like the Shrewsbury 5-2 with the 3 goalkeepers. Remember that one, 82? And the Joe Waters debut at QPR. And before my time, but a hell of a game against Manchester City that was 4-3. Frank Large was the hero that night, 68, that the old guys still talk about now. All these moments were FA Cup games. A few league games, but the real magic games were FA Cup. But we never won it until recently. Once you have finally lifted that trophy for the first time, you can laugh about Wickham and you can laugh about losing at Barnsley on a Wednesday night and all the other terrible exits we had. And 6 years when we lost the third round from sort of 85 to 91 out in the third round every time. But all that, the moment we lifted that trophy in front of 6,000 of us at Wembley, the COVID restrictions, I can now chuckle about Wickham and the rest. But I didn't feel like that at the time.
Hey, Dave. Wickham's side in this, so their run to the quarter final up to this point. Harrow, Borough, Millwall, you know, there's a Millwall team that they knock out that's, what, 3 years away from reaching the final themselves. Grimsby Town, you know, Wolves, as you said, and Wimbledon just a year on from, you know, less than a year on from relegation from the Premier League. Evocative in itself, you know, a game that went to a replay, took a penalty shootout, and obviously, you know, Laurie Sanchez up against the team that he won the FA Cup for 13 years earlier. You know, even up until this point, you know, they could have gone to Filbert Street and, you know, lost in heroic circumstances. It would still be a magnificent story for them.
Absolutely. I mean, for third division teams to get that far in the FA Cup, I mean, it was rare even then. I mean, it's probably become even rarer ever since. As you say, it's a great run to get all that way through, and to beat some decent teams on the way, you know, to punch above their weight, if you like. And that is how you kind of look at this game. It's going to be the glorious defeat, but, you know, we've done really well to get this far. And okay, we lose 4-0 at Filbert Street against a Premier League team, but never mind. We've had a nice day out again, and it's all been a terrific run. But I mean, you know, you look at that Wickham side, you know, and there is nobody in there who went on to be, you know, who went on to have a great career anywhere else. I mean, yeah, they're all good professional footballers, all had, you know, long careers and so on. But there's no, again, as we said last time with Lincoln, there's nobody there who's the ring, you know, who's a superstar in waiting, or somebody who's on the way down and, you know, and has still got that ability. It is a With all due respect, it's a journeyman team, isn't it, really? But I mean, the attitude of the team on the day. I mean, I was watching some of the highlights earlier on, and you can see after 10 seconds what's going on here. Because Leicester kick off, Robbie Savage sort of languidly knocks the ball back to one of his centre halves, and I think it's Keith Ryan, closes him down and nearly knocks him off his feet. And that's in the first 6 or 7 seconds of the game, and you can see what's coming from there. They've established their attitude to that game. And what's going to go on? And it's exactly what you'd expect from Lloris Sanchez, isn't it? It's the Wimbledon up and at 'em kind of. There's nothing pretty about the way we can go about the game, but it's got all that fire and attitude about it. And right from the outset, that's what you get. And that does knock good teams off its stride. We used to talk about the FA Cup being a leveler a lot of the time because the pitches were terrible. By this stage, that's much less of an issue. So what the lower teams do is they knock you out of your stride by being really physical and being in your face and closing everybody down and all that kind of stuff. And that was what Wigan did right from the outset. And they were, on that day, they were able to keep it going for 90 odd minutes.
Sanchez was sent off, wasn't he? I think there was a cross into the area. Might have been Gary Rowett handled it clearly, and they didn't get a penalty. Sanchez went after the linesman to such an extent, the old Wimbledon spirit, and the ref sent him off. And he went down the tunnel and watched the winner on the live feed down the tunnel. So he wasn't actually sat on the bench when they got there. When Essendon got his winner, that's all part of the legend of the game, I suppose.
Absolutely. I mean, Bill, Lloris Sanchez, as Gary said there, he gets himself sent off, but he's the catalyst, isn't he? He sets the tempo, he sets the mood. He's the one, as Dave said, this isn't a team that have got too many notable names in it where you think, oh, they went off and did this. Chris Vinnie comes in there, who was, I remember him being massively highly rated, and Liverpool were having an eye on him at one point, and then he went to Rangers, and he was one of these next big things that didn't quite make it. Lloris Sanchez in this, his own personal story is part of this, and action-packed on this day itself in getting himself sent off.
Yeah, I mean, as Gary said, that Laurie was in a separate room when they got the winner, and you could see from the way he celebrated just how much it meant. It must have been a wet day that day, Gary, I think, because he looked like he was drenched. And I loved his sense of humour when he talked about Essendon. He said that the only attribute he had was he was available. And then he went on to say that he didn't score another goal for the club. In fact, he didn't score another goal for any league club. And he said that probably tells you why he was available. But my goodness, he did a great job. And it was very innovative of Sanchez to think, well, we need a forward. How do we go about getting one? And I think he tried Ian Wright, didn't he? And Ian Wright said, well, I'd love to play, but I'd be depriving one of the lads of a place, and I don't want to do that. And then he looked at Vialli and thought, could we get Vialli? And I mean, the thought of Vialli playing for Wickham against Leicester is well, pretty hard to imagine. But anyway, that didn't happen. And Roy came up and did the business, but that's all he did. And Sanchez has got to take some credit for that.
Occurred to me that Martin O'Neill made Wickham, and he's the one who elevated them, and Wickham burst the balloon of O'Neill's team. So that came around full circle.
It did indeed. Yeah. No, it did indeed. Yeah, it did.
O'Neill, I mean, he was obviously a very loyal man, and he actually had two testimonials, Wickham against Leicester. And I wonder if that harmed your chances, but because by the time you played them in the cup, they'd already played you twice in testimonial games.
Yeah, I've not thought of that. It's just funny how things go round.
Does indeed. I mean, Dave, I was going to bring Martin O'Neill into this equation and his links with Wycombe Wanderers. When they first came into the Football League and, the subsequent years under O'Neill, they were seen as a massively progressive football club. The building of that ground, the rise into the Football League, everything around them was kind of like the template of teams coming into the Football League and what can be emulated. There was a Wickham way about it. But within this, by the time the club's in the possession of Lauri Sanchez, they're very, very different. You know, he's brought that kind of, you know, physical aspect to it all. And, you know, but without Martin O'Neill, you know, they wouldn't have even been in this position.
No, he did a fantastic job there, didn't he? I mean, and as you say, they were very much seen as the model. But I mean, you know, there's been larger teams that are the model for something over the years, haven't they? You know, Charlton used to be the model for A, to get into the Premier League and stay there forever. Now they're in League One, and you know, Ipswich were the model when they came up and got into Europe in the first year in the Premier League. And yeah, you know, these models never really last very long because football changes that quickly. You've got to change with it. And I mean, by the time we get into this weekend, it's what Gary Megson always used to call alehouse football. There's a lot of the putting it in the mixer and seeing what happens about the Wickham team. And to be fair, they did it really well, particularly on this occasion. I mean, you know, it was a bombard. You know, and Leicester have got really good centre-halves. I mean, you know, Gerry Taggart and Matt Elliott had played some great football for Leicester over the 5 or 6 years previously, where they'd, you know, got into the Premier League and had those great cup runs and all that. So, you know, it wasn't against any mugs, and it wasn't against central defenders who were frightened of getting their head in the middle of it and you know, getting their head kicked off if necessary. But the bombardment was just too much for them on the day. And you know, there's always, as Gary says, you know, this being a turning point, you don't necessarily see it coming, but there's always a moment where a side that's done really well, for whatever reason it is, whether they've got old together or to change manager or whatever it is, the wheels drop off. What you don't want it to do is to drop off in the sixth round of the FA Cup in front of the entire country. That's your nightmare. And unfortunately, that's what happened for Leicester that day.
I mean, Taggart, Steve Walsh had gone by then, but Taggart and Elliot, you wouldn't want to meet them down a dark alley, would you? They were hard as nails. When if we played a three and Walsh was in there as well, they were formidable. But like the other thing, yeah, Walsh had gone. He didn't get on with Taylor, and the other two probably weren't getting any younger. And it was a fragile situation. We weren't absolutely coasting along and being brilliant. We were fourth in the Premier League, but it's hard to explain how fragile that was. And Wickham were the brick that brought it all down, and fragile it obviously was.
Well, one thing I will say about Wickham is that of the 13 players on the pitch against Leicester, I think 9 played over 200 games for Wickham. And I mean, I don't think you even got that in old style football, let alone in modern day football. And I would imagine O'Neill probably brought quite a lot of those 9 to Wickham. So he's got a lot to answer for, I think. He did a great job.
We'd already nearly announced Mike Walker as the new manager. He'd done the sort of walk around the ground before a game, and then half the board said, hang on a minute, we want O'Neill. And there was a bit of battle, and the O'Neill faction won. Yeah, thank God for that. Which is one of the best decisions the club ever made.
Dave, within this, you know, the Roy Essendon story, you know, we've touched on slightly there, but yeah, we've reached the millennium now. This, you know, again, this isn't really meant to happen. You know, there's the side of the story that they put the message out on teletext. Side of the story they say they put the you know out on the internet. His story itself, as well, is just epic.
Apart from the fact that it was on the internet and on CFAX, which is far too modern. I mean, this is Billy's Boots, and it's a story out of Scorcher or Tiger or Roy of the Rovers. I mean, it is that somebody comes down from the crowd and then scores the goal that wins the cup. It is the comic book story, and it's incredible. And you know, you look through his career, and I mean, and again, you know, we would have all loved to have played any football league game, any FA Cup game. You know, I mean, not knocking him in any sense at all, but I mean, he's the definition of a journeyman. You know, I mean, you know, he played half a dozen games here, half a dozen games there. I think he played at East Fife, he played at Motherwell very, very briefly. They suddenly find you. Lauri Sanchez has run out of forwards with an injury crisis coming into this game. He's got to find somebody to play. As Bill says, you know, start talking about Vialli and Ian Wright, and they end up with Essendon. I mean, you'd think that's a bit of a come down, but it is, again, it's the quintessential FA Cup story. It's, you know, he's in the same way that Ronnie Radford will be remembered forever, so will he, because he scored, you know, he scored the goal that mattered on match of the day at the point when all of that really counted for something. Not only does he score the goal that wins the game, he scores it with virtually the last touch of the, you know, I mean, there's about a minute to go, 2 minutes to go, whatever it is. His manager's standing, watching it on the television in, you know, in a cupboard. I mean, it's perfect, isn't it? It's got everything. It's nothing else. There's nothing else that you could add onto that other than, you know, Fiona Richmond running onto the pitch with a jacuzzi behind her or something. I mean, it's the FA Cup story.
I mean, he could have got Vialli in, outlandish as it may be. He could have got him to guest in, but he might not have been in the right place at the right time, or any other striker you mentioned, but Sando was, and that's part of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Gary, within this game, there was a lot of needle between Robbie Savage and Steve Brown. Steve Brown gets himself sent off at the very end for taking his shirt off as part of the celebrations. The two of them have been niggling at each other all game. You know, any recollections of the you know, the running battle between Savage and Brown that day? It
wasn't unusual for Robbie Savage to be involved in the niggle. Yeah. He was always sort of never far away from trouble, but he gets slagged off all the time. But those 2 or 3 years at Leicester, and he got into that midfield with Lennon and Izzet. They were fabulous, absolutely fabulous. And he managed to sort of get in and make it a three. He was really good for us. In the 90th minute, he'd do a lung bursting run one end of the pitch to the other. He had massive energy, but he did also, you know, he got the wrong side of people. He got the opposing fans and the opposing players seemed to just dislike. I don't know if it was his hair or his sort of attitude, but I mean, he didn't get booked very often. He wasn't, I think, when he got sent off at Wembley in the 99 League Cup final against Tottenham, I think that might have been his first sending off. He'd usually do a bit of damage and then he'd be distance himself, he'd be away from it. Yeah, it was a more physical game than we were used to, as I recall. I mean, we had to play Wimbledon twice a year, and that was always a few bloody noses. But it was more physical, and I just wonder if there's a little bit of complacency as well as we went in. I don't remember much about the game. Maybe it was the first half, really almost unwatchable. And then Wickham scored early. Just after the second half started, they scored, didn't they? Yeah, and we got one back. Is it? You know, but when they got the winner, there was hardly time to kick off. I think we got the ball upfield once and came to nothing. But it's happened before and it's happened since, but never quite that massive watershed of that game.
Carthy that got the goal for Wickham, and although he was a centre-half, he scored 5 goals in 9 games in the cup run, including the opener against Leicester. But sadly, he died in 2017 as a young man, a relatively young man anyway. But he became a goal-scoring machine when it came to the cup.
Dave, Wickham was part of this. They go on to an FA Cup semi-final against Liverpool. I was at that one at Villa Park. And that was with a degree of the uncomfortable, should we say. There was a Robbie Fowler second goal, 7 minutes from time. But then, you know, there was a bit of panic towards the end as one went in. Wind blows in a slightly different direction. This could have gone even further.
Yeah, I mean, talking about him as being rudimentary, I mean, you know, it sounds like I'm doing him down. I mean, having watched the highlights on YouTube again earlier today, I mean, they deserve to win the game. They created chances. And they created chaos. That, you know, it was very much in the mould of that Wimbledon crazy game. It was chaos theatre. You know, they created trouble everywhere. And I mean that tackle on Savage today, there's no way he stays on the pitch. No way in the world. But there's a great moment when Savage gets caught and he rolls over and he's there in agony and he looks up to just make sure that the referee's seen it. And then he starts rolling around again. Typical Robbie Savage, and that's, you know. But I mean, I suppose it is the dad's army thing. They don't like it up. And you know, top division teams, increasingly by, you know, the time we get into the 90s, it's a changing game, isn't it? You know, there isn't so much of that long ball stuff. There isn't quite as physical as it was. You know, we're in the Premier League era. It's becoming, you know, you're getting people like Dennis Bergkamp coming over here to play, and it's a slightly changed way of playing it. And teams at the top don't see this sort of physical approach as often as they used to. And I mean, that first goal that comes in, I mean, it's a, and I suppose from Wickham's point of view, it's a great goal. I mean, it's looped in, left-footed from the right touchline, a free kick. And I mean, watching, I mean, Gerry Taggart was a good centre-half at the top level for a long time. I don't know what he's trying to do, because he manages to jump underneath it and slightly to the side of it somehow. The Wickham fella, McCarthy, comes in behind him and scores. I mean, it's a goal that Leicester wouldn't concede, you know, in a month of Sundays, really, ordinarily. But equally, they probably haven't faced a ball like that in the Premier League against attackers like that for ages. And that was where the difference was starting to come in, I think. They weren't quite as comfortable against physical teams as they would have been 10 years ago, 10 years earlier, rather. So I think it kind of reflects that changing of the guard in English football a bit in that sense.
I mean, Bill, when a team like this goes on such an amazing run, there has to be a fear factor behind, you know, the way that an opposing team can, I don't know, lose a game like this or come close to losing a game like this. Or, you know, in you know, my side of this being, you know, the Liverpool supporter watching us play Wickham in the semi-final and it being a little bit too uncomfortable towards the end. You know, that sense of kind of like, and almost like a, I don't know, a negative anticipation almost. You know, you're fearing the worst. No, someone certainly as a supporter, and that edginess has got to play a part in it as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure Gary and Leicester fans thought, oh blimey, you know, that this is a tricky game. It'd be typical Leicester if we were to lose this one. But I think the other side of that coin is Wickham probably felt that they were unbeatable. And that was illustrated in the previous round against Wimbledon. I mean, they gave a penalty away in the very, very last minute. And obviously, if the penalty had gone in, they would have been out of the cup. And the goalkeeper, Martin Taylor, managed to save that penalty. They went behind in extra time. And in the very last minute of extra time, they got an equaliser and then won the penalty shootout. So they must have been going into that Leicester game thinking, you know, we're invincible. It doesn't matter what people throw at us, we can overcome it. So they were hopefully full of confidence. There was no pressure on them. And Leicester were probably thinking, well, we can't win here because if we beat them, it's expected. And if we lose, well, you know, it's a bit of a disaster because we're so close to Wembley for the first time in umpteen years. So, you know, I think they... No, they just built up a lot of confidence. Didn't go through to the league, did it? I mean, they didn't plummet like Leicester, but they only finished mid-table. So they didn't carry that confidence into the league, but certainly in the cup, they were, you know, really, really going for it.
I mean, Gary, we spoke earlier about the dividing line, the fork in the road here for Leicester City. I'd just throw Wimbledon into that as well before we go into Leicester's kind of path. You know, the less than a year on from having dropped out of the Premier League, they'll soon be hijacked and taken off to Milton Keynes. You know, you look at that Wimbledon side losing in the fifth round on a penalty shootout. You know, just what a run to the quarterfinals or beyond would have done in terms of their fate.
Most clubs, I think, could point to something like this. I mean, I always think Cambridge United, Cambridge come from nowhere, gone back to nowhere, but John Beck's team were challenging us for promotion in 91, 92, and they stuffed us at the Abbey Stadium in the league game, 5-1, I think. We got them in the playoffs, semis, and we went there, and it was very tight, 1-1, and then we beat them 5-0 at Fieldwood Street in the second leg. And they went from being a team on the verge of the Premier League into just, boom, just gone. And we signed half their players, and you know, Claridge, Lee Philpott, eventually Dion Dublin, but not that soon. There's another one, I think. But yeah, there are moments where it's now or never. And if you don't, in one night, their history altered massively. It can happen to a club.
In that year as well, for Cambridge, 91-92, did they reach the quarterfinals of the FA Cup themselves? And I seem to remember around about that time.
Yeah, John Beck had them playing this. He grew the grass line in the corners, didn't he? Bang it in the corner. It holds up in the grass. Wing of both sides, so you can deliver a good cross. Dion Dublin in the middle. It was a bit agricultural to watch, but by God, it worked for a while.
It absolutely did.
Like most methods of play, eventually they get found out.
Hey, Dave, you know, this. I don't know, you look at where Leicester went to beyond this. It is startling. I know there are, I don't know, fallaways of teams, but this is one of the most pronounced that I can think of the top of my head.
It is. It was really, really quick. I mean, following season is relegation. And then there was, you know,
Administration,
yeah. All the way down into the third division, League One, whatever it is. Whatever it was at the time, I can't remember. You know, I mean, it is a massive fall from grace for a team that, you know, as Gary says, was always first or second division. You know, but to fall all the way to League One was a real eye opener. I mean, you know, a lot of teams have done it. I've had that period, Wolves, Albion, Birmingham. You know, there's lots of teams. Sunderland, sorry, Bill.
Yeah, thanks.
We've all been there.
The great part about that story is that 7 years after going down into the third tier for the first time in our history, we won the Premier League. So everyone should be able to take something from that, because it was impossible and we were our lowest, and we just gradually came back and did something absolutely remarkable. And what I was going to do this podcast without mentioning that.
No, rightly so. Along with the FA Cup success as well, that as you said earlier on, you know, it kind of makes you be able to look at, you know, a game like this, you know, very differently, most definitely. Dave, West Brom's 2001 FA Cup run,
brief as ever.
Do you know where it ended?
Third round, as I think it did most years around that period. Derby County, as I recall, we lost 3-2, which made it sound like it was a close game, but it wasn't. We were 3-0 down. I think we scored twice in about the last 5 minutes, last 5-10 minutes, to get some respectability back to it. But no, the FA Cup was not our thing. Although the following year, we did actually have a good run. I won't mention to Gary one of the teams that we beat on the way. But we got to the sixth round that year. And that was the first time, I think, we got to the sixth round for about 20 years by that point. So no. Nothing to talk about in the FA Cup for a long, long, long period.
And Bill, do you remember where Sunderland got to this season in the FA Cup?
I think so, Stephen. I think we beat Ipswich in the third round. We beat Palace in the fourth round after a replay. And then we lost at home to West Ham 1-0. I think Canute scored. But we talked about Leicester's fall from grace in that season. The end of January, believe it or not, Sunderland was second. And we played Man United in the top of the table clash and we lost. And it was a very unlucky defeat. We had two players sent off. Andy Cole scored a very dodgy goal. And we, in my view, plummeted, not quite as much as Leicester, but we fell down to seventh place. But we were doing really, really well. But in the cup, having beaten West Ham at Upton Park very, very comfortably a few weeks before, we managed to lose 1-0 and went out in the fifth round, I think. I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong.
You've nailed it there, Bill.
We'll serve it up then. And how did Liverpool do it this season, Steve?
We won it this year, Dave. We won it. But to be honest, I would say that. I mean, I don't know, looking back, but the draw, I don't know if we seem to know that Leicester City would have been who were playing. I don't know whether it was just one of those sixth sense things or one of those daft years where ITV had the contract, so the quarterfinal draw was made, I don't know, on what, third round replay midweek or something. So we kind of knew what was coming. But I do remember not wanting to play Leicester because they'd just beaten us. And we'd beaten them earlier in the season at Anfield, but it hadn't been an easy game. So we'd had our difficulties, our recent difficulties with Leicester, and I can remember being quite eager not to play them, moving forwards. But yeah, we went and won that one, upsetting Arsenal in the final greatly with a couple of late ones. On a day when Stefan Ancho was, I think, the best goalkeeper on the pitch, which is maybe a story for another podcast. But thank you so much for this. This has been a great podcast. Gary, thank you so much for your time and coming to talk about not Leicester's greatest moment, but we must have you back on to talk about a happier Leicester City experience.
As I say, once you've won the FA Cup, you can laugh about all those terrible things that happened. But yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's been great to have you on. Thanks so much, Gary. Bill, thank you so much. A great choice for the quarterfinals. Have you thought about the semi-finals yet? Which
Well,
direction we'll go for that one?
we did have one or two tentative ideas, and we did wonder about actually having Middlesbrough Chesterfield, which ended up not to be a massive shock, but it certainly was a partial shock, and it was very controversial. But I think we need to think a bit about which semi-final we choose.
Excellent, excellent. Whichever one we get, it's going to be an absolute cracker. And Dave, thanks so much again for all your contributions on this one. Wickham Wonder, I think, it was the one to go for without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, it was a great choice. We're definitely not doing QPR against the Albion in 1982 semi-final, I can tell you that much.
That was on the short list.
Get a longer list.
Excellent stuff. All that leaves me to do is say thank you so much for listening. And please do join us again next time, where we will cover one of the biggest shocks the semi-final has had to offer up in the great history of the FA Cup. This has been another podcast from These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.